Morning, everyone. Welcome to Senate. Yes. On March 24th, I recognize Senator Ward, Senator Green, and I'm Senator Wilkin. Purpose of today's meeting is we have a little housekeeping to do, and then we're going to hear from Senate Bill 58 regarding the Junior ASAP program, then go back to Senate Bill 11, having to do with school debt reimbursement. And then if we have time, and we should, we'll have Senate Bill 132, which is a new bill having to do with criminal justice, including sex offender registration. So let's start with some housekeeping. We have a packet of information from different people in school districts regarding Senate Bill 146, Senate Bill 36, just for your information. And we are putting together all of that correspondence into a more formal book so that we can keep that where we can reference it as the bills go through. Regarding 146, we're still working on numbers, trying to roll in what we've heard for the last 2 weeks into it. And it's a bit of a daunting task, but we're making progress. And I expect Wednesday, I would hope to have something that we're comfortable with discussing and passing on. Stay tuned for that. That is definitely on the table. There's a packet here. Let's see if everybody will take one of those. Having to do with the State Board of Education has two new nominees. Nominees. They're going to be in town on April 7th. I thought it would be nice if we asked them to come and just present their resumes to us. If you don't want to do that, let me know. If you do, we'll just plan on having them spend a little time with us on April 7th. And you have enclosed here the packets of all the nominees that we'll have to make a decision on, but certainly the two that are of most interest to us are the two having to do with the State Board of Education. So let me know if I don't hear from the committee. We'll just plan on having them spend a little time with us on April 7th. Anything else for the good of the committee before we start?
Senator Ward? Do we have their resumes already?
That should be in the packet.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
That's Roy M. Nagiak Sr. from Barrow and Marilyn Webb from Juneau. Morning, Senator Newman.
Good morning. All right, Mr. Chairman.
Good. We're ready to roll. Senate Bill 58. Joe, you were with us, and we have a couple of people in the audience that in the hearing room that are going to speak to us about this. Let's see, we heard this about 2 weeks ago, and Mr. Ambrose, you got together with some folks and have come up with a committee substitute, which the chair would entertain be placed on the table for consideration.
I would so move, Mr. Chairman, we consider that.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 58 is moved to be on the table for consideration. Is there objection?
Mr. Chairman, I don't object, but I sure have to see a copy of it before I...
Let's see. Should be...
Right here.
Here's my packet, but I don't see the bill. Let's see it.
We'll get you one. Okay. Hearing no objection, CS for Senate Bill 58 is on the table. And Mr. Ambrose, where are we this morning?
First of all, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Ambrose. I work for Senator Robin Taylor, the prime sponsor of Senate Bill 58. Per your request, Mr. Chairman, we met with representatives of the court system, Department of Law, Department of Health and Social Services, and the Department of Public Safety Division of Motor Vehicles, all of whom have a role to play with what has evolved into the committee substitute suggested for Senate Bill 58. Senator Taylor is very comfortable with this version of the bill, which essentially combines the original Senate Bill 58 with Senate Bill 71. It was Senator Taylor's intent all along to provide some sort of a mechanism where we can step in, someone can step in, when it becomes pretty obvious that some of these kids that we're dealing with have serious problems with alcohol. It is surprising how little leeway district court judges actually have. As you recall, Mr. Chairman, back in 1995, the legislature moved minor consuming out of the juvenile justice system and into district court. The original version of Senate Bill 58 was introduced to correct some problems that occurred with that. I mean, number one, the $100 fine was something that apparently the kids thought was a joke. We continue to have repeated offenders. And also, because the court system, or the one of the punishments that a judge had available was to revoke a driver's license, there was a district court ruling which was later upheld in the Court of Appeals that because a minor's driver's license could be suspended by the court, they were entitled to a jury trial and a public defender. Senate Bill 58 removes the driver's license revocation from the purview of the court. It remains as an administrative action by the Division of Motor Vehicles. What we've done, and let me just take you through the draft, you should be working with work draft 123/K, dated 3/15/97. I'm going to talk to you about the sections that directly relate to Senator Taylor's main interests, and there's someone here from Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse that can address the rest of the provisions. Section 1 of the committee substitute defines the offense of possession, control, and consumption of alcoholic beverages by persons under the age of 21. AS 04-16050B, amended by this bill, prescribes the penalty for the offense. Current law treats the offense as a violation and instructs the court to levy a fine of not less than $100. The amendment to this section keeps the offense as a violation on the first offense, but increases the fine to $250. Second and subsequent offenses within a two-year period go to Class B misdemeanor status. The Section 2 of the bill directs that the money collected as fines for punishment of this violation be deposited in the general fund for use by the legislature to make appropriations for the assessment and referral programs that are provided later in the bill. Basically, sections 3, 5, and 6 deal with taking the driver's license revocation out of the court system, leaving it in an administrative practice of DMV. Mr. Chairman, there's in the fiscal note packet provided by Health and Human Services, there's some pretty startling data as far as the rate of minor consuming in Alaska, and especially the repeat offenders. And it's the repeat offenders, the kids that aren't getting the message that Senator Taylor is concerned about. He sat through a court proceeding in Wrangell where we had kids that were on their 12th, 13th, and 14th offense. These are kids who are in trouble with alcohol, and we need to provide some sort of a mechanism where they can be screened and then referred to the appropriate treatment. If you will note on the fiscal note from Health and Social Services, this thing zeroes itself out based on the estimated number of fines that would be received. We can institute this program. It's probably not on the scale originally envisioned by Senate Bill 71, but it's a good start. The legislature can then see how it works and decide how to handle it as far as funding in the future. But we think you've got a good bill, and I really want to express the gratitude of Senator Taylor and myself as far as the cooperation among all of the agencies involved in coming up with this committee substitute, and we recommend it to you.
Thank you, Mr. Ambrose. Questions? Mr. Ambrose, how do you propose, how are we going to measure the success of this bill over time?
Mr. Chairman, that's a question that is similar to one that was asked about the effectiveness of alcohol treatment programs in Alaska several years ago. There was a study commissioned by the legislature at that time which came back with the result that alcohol treatment programs in Alaska are a lot more effective than some of us thought they were. Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse will be providing the curriculum for the classes. We'll be designating, certifying the providers. Most of the providers that will be used, as I understand it, are agencies currently in existence. We're not creating a whole new layer here. That have a fairly established track record based on the study that the legislature commissioned a couple of years ago.
So is there, how do we know 5 years from now whether this has worked or not? Is there something quantifiable that we'll be able to refer to?
Hopefully, Mr. Chairman, we will see a drastic reduction in the number of repeat offenders, especially these kids that end up with a long series of minor concerns. And maybe Lauren Jones from Alcohol and Alcoholism and Drug Abuse can address that more thoroughly.
Other questions of Mr. Ambrose?
Mr. Chairman, before I leave the table, I did circulate a memo to Senator Green, who had asked in an earlier meeting about the ability of DMV to provide for a youngster whose license has been suspended to be able to drive to work. That is something that they can do now, and they also do it for college students. They don't do it as a general rule just to get to school. They figure there's probably another way to get to school, but it's handled on a case by case basis, and they do have that flexibility.
And that's answered in this memo here for the committee. And you've been also passed out the committee substitute fiscal notes that Mr. Ambrose spoke of. You're welcome to stay at the table, and we'll hear from a couple of folks in the hearing room. Mr. Lindstrom. Mr. Jones.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Lauren Jones. I'm the director of the Division of Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. Joe Ambrose mentioned, we did work to include the provisions of Senate Bill 71 into the committee substitute. The sections that moved over from Senate Bill 71 do basically two things. One is to transfer the approval process for alcohol information schools, both for adults and minors, from the Division of Motor Vehicles to the Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse. That's so that we can set up age-appropriate curriculum for minors, as well as improve upon the current curriculum for adult services. The other change that it makes is that it gives the authority to the division for that purpose. And then it allows us to begin to put together quality programs for minors to do the assessment and monitoring of their compliance with the court orders regarding their arrest for minor consuming or minor in possession and their loss of their driver's license. It allows us to make sure that they attend, make sure that the services that are being provided are having an effect to monitor these kids' process through this, dealing with the court and with the Department of Motor Vehicles. In the process of doing that, the division will use the funds available to grant out to local agencies throughout the state the ability to operate the youth assessment programs. Through our granting authority, we provide these funds to the local programs. In an earlier hearing when we were discussing Senate Bill 71, the chairman asked, and we responded in a letter as to exactly where we would fund these programs and under how we would do that. As part of the fiscal note, you'll see this chart here, which sort of lays out for the last 2 years in what communities the administrative revocation took place, what communities these children were in. As you can see, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Soldotna, Ketchikan, Homer, Sitka, Palmer, Kenai areas tend to be the highest. We would concentrate our efforts there. In fact, most of those communities continue to grow in the 2 years that the program was in existence. We would specifically place in the grants specific evaluative criteria to, one, measure the reduction in the number of repeat offenders, and also hopefully to have some reduction in the number of first-time offenders. We really believe that if we can get a message out that there are consequences, that these consequences are certain, that these consequences will be monitored, you will be required to comply, you will not be able to just simply walk away and not do anything about it. We think that message will get out, and along with the fines, will begin to have an impact on first-time offenders. This is the first, we're in actually the third year that this use it or lose it has been in effect, and at least between the first and second year, there was not a significant increase in the number of first-time offenders, but it stayed the same. It didn't go down. And there was certainly a significant increase in the number of second offenses and third offenses in the second year. And as Mr. Ambrose said, that will be one of our primary targets. How we will measure this 5 years, whether we know we would have had an impact, is hopefully the total number will be down, and the number of repeat offenders will significantly be down, as will be the number of first offenders. With that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Senator Ward?
Yes. Do you know what questions are asked of a person that's applying for a student's driver's permit or an underage person applying for a license with the lose it or use it law currently when they go in to get a driver's license?
No, sir, I do not. My kids passed that test long before this law was in effect, so I'm not sure what was on
mine. But I care about these ones that are in the statistics right now, and somebody is crunching cars and driving around and doing these things. And they seem to have a big study about to take off here, but I don't know if the actual kids, when these kids were here, we asked the three that were in the audience, and they said they knew about it. But I've asked other ones, and they said, well, we heard something like that, but yet they had passed a test. Here we're about to take off on another study, and I don't know that we are requiring the citizens or young citizens of this state to know in writing. That is one of the questions, and you must know the answer to it or you can't get a license. This is the third time I've asked this, and I guess I'll continue asking it until somebody shows me a copy of the test and how we can redo it to make sure that it's on there. And if it's not on there in a form that is strong enough, we need to make it more so, so we don't have that high of a statistic. And so the kids that ride around with these guys, they know, and girls, and so they get out of the car. It seems to me we're creating something here without that key element, and that is not distributing information to this group, but distributing information to those kids and making them have to pass a test. That's why I'm asking this, and I've asked it again. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Ambrose.
Mr. Chairman, to the chair, to Senator Ward, I believe Juanita Hensley from Division of Motor Vehicles is here and can more accurately respond to your question. Awareness up front that this kind of activity puts their license at risk and a lot of other things needs to be clear. I want to clarify, Mr. Chairman, that this bill does not propose any kind of study. It is a bill to divert kids into actual treatment programs.
Ms. Hensley, while Senator Green asks her question, I'd also like to recognize that Senator Ellis has joined this morning. Senator Green.
Yeah, Lauren, I was wondering, in the current adult ASAP program, isn't there a component by which those people are required to stay in touch even after they've gone through the program?
As Mr. Chairman, Senator Green, the current process is that an individual who comes into an alcohol safety action program is there until they have successfully completed the assignment, whether it be alcohol education or treatment. And so once that process is over and they have successfully completed, for all intents and purposes, the ASAP function is closed. Most persons do get a year probation with the court, so that if they were to reoffend within that year's probation, then the ASAP records would still be there. We would be able to tell the court whether they had completed or not completed their activities. But they are only in contact with the Alcohol Safety Action Program as long as they're going through the process of completing either the education or treatment. Once that has been completed, if they have not completed, then we do try to maintain contact with them and monitor them through the process until they do.
Is that a similar provision for the junior ASAP
program?
If there's a probation status, they will stay.
That's correct.
Leslie, how are we alerting the 14-year-olds and 16-year-olds to this law?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Juanita Hensley. I'm with the Division of Motor Vehicles. To answer your question, we have several means that we are educating the students on the use of alcohol and the consequences of the use it, lose it law. We have a brochure that through the Governor's Office of Highway Safety Planning Agency, we have developed a brochure that we have available for all the students in all the schools. We have them available at the Division of Motor Vehicle Field Offices for the students. We also have the driver improvement specialists who are stationed in Anchorage and one here in Juneau who are going to the high schools and middle schools around the state. They basically go to the areas where they can where there's a road system. They've gone to Wasilla, they've gone to Palmer schools, they've gone to both middle and high schools, they've gone to the Anchorage High Schools, the Fairbanks High School, and the Juneau High School. We have to request permission to go and speak in front of the schools and in front of the students, so it's strictly at the invitation of the school that we can do that. They have taken the brochures in and talked to all the students. They have lots of great questions. These students are really, it's amazing the quality of questions that you get asked. We also, and some circumstance, sometimes take a state trooper in with us at a couple of those schools. There has been a state trooper that's gone in with the driver improvement specialist to talk about safe driving and drugs and alcohol and things of that nature. We do have a section in the driver's manual that deals strictly with drugs and alcohol and driving. We have questions that are state-specific questions in the driver's test that deal with Alaska law on alcohol. I don't know, Senator Ward, how many of those questions there are at this point, because we have several tests and it varies on the number of questions that are asked per test. But there are questions that are asked of that as well. The students that where we go to the classes are usually informed already. Because they've had a friend of theirs that has been stopped and are in contact with police and has had their license revoked. Word spreads really quick. Information is out there. Whether they're choosing to read the information or choosing to be informed about it, that I can't speak to. But we do, and we have been trying to get the information out to all students.
Senator Ward?
I appreciate all that, and I it's good we got brochures and we're going and doing all this stuff, but what I want to know, and my nephew's about to take his test, I just want to know, you know, how can we get to the point where one of the questions are, how many underage young citizens of Alaska have lost their license due to having alcohol in the car? And for them to have to research and to come up with a number, I mean, is that really hard to do? And we don't have that kind of a question. And that's why I would like to have a copy of the questions, because we went through this, you know, I mean, because my understanding from the kids are, yeah, some of them know about it, some of them don't know about it. They study this book so they can get through a test, but there is nothing in there that says that they have to perform a responsibility to get this privilege. And one of the responsibilities is to know that this danger exists. And it seems to me that a question can be a learning question too. And if my nephew had to find out that there were 3,000 people in this, and he had to find that somewhere and learn it, or else he couldn't pass the test, and this became one of the mandatory questions in the test where it was not put into the formula, you had to pass this one, that would heighten it, and that would get around. And we have that tool, and it doesn't cost any money. And I'm not saying the sponsor just wanted a study, but I would rather do something that might save a kid than 5 years from now look and see what kids did we not save. And I'm just real serious that the question of this is the most important thing in the world to them is the rite of passage to drive around, and they will bother to learn it. But right now, they don't know that 3,000 kids violated. They don't have to know because we're not asking them. We as a society don't say that that's important to them. And we need to say this is important, and not 3,000-something, 3,261, and if you don't know it, you don't get a license. Figure it out. And that's kind of where I'm heading on this.
Through the chair, Senator Ward, I would be more than happy to work with you and your office on developing the questions involved are the information that we need to have in the driver's manual on that issue. We are in the process of revising our driver's manual. It is a national driver's manual that we are adopting, but it's the same questions that are asked in Alaska are going to be the same questions asked in Florida. But we also have a section in there that's strictly going to be state-specified and state-specific so that we can ask those type of questions and have that in the manual. So I'll be more than happy to work with you on that.
Thank you, Ms. Hensley. Senator Lehman?
Juanita, sometime in the last several months, I was contacted by a constituent whose underage son, or at least at the time of the offenses, was underage. Found or either convicted or administratively found to be a minor in possession. I don't remember all the details, but it was a rather long story. I believe there were multiple cases and maybe another one dealing with driving, but there was at least one, maybe more, where he was in possession while not driving. And that, of course, added to the penalties. The net result was that he was suspended, his driver's license was suspended for something like 10 years. So it'd be about, as he related to me, he'd be about 30 before he could drive legally. His concern was that it was too inflexible, we were being too tough, and I told him that I would check to see if the law is working. I supported the law, and I still do. I think it's, but I just want to know, is it working? Is this an unusual type case? Is there something we can do to be flexible in cases like that, or maybe in these specific circumstances we shouldn't be? I don't know. I don't know the details of it, but I just wanted to relate that case to see if, you know, if what was done is reasonable, and maybe that was good public policy.
Through the chair, Senator Lehman, one of the things that I think I've spoken before, and I gave a wrong number. When I prepared the fiscal note for the original use it, lose it law, I estimated 2,500, and I think I gave the testimony of 3,500. The original, I went back and I looked at that fiscal note, and this fiscal note that I estimated the number of students being caught were going to be 2,500. Well, we have 3,900 or 3,900 plus now. It's been since July 1, 94 that the law went into inception, and we don't know whether it's working at this point, because at the same time in 1995 it was taken out of the criminal justice system, putting into a violation where the judges have no control to mandate that the person go to alcohol treatment. And with this now being put in here in this law, in this bill, that will allow us to mandate that person be screened and go to alcohol treatment, and before they can get their license back, have to absolutely show that they are in compliance with or completed an alcohol program. That will we will be able to determine whether the law is working or not. This has been the first full year, 96 has been the first full year since we've had anything without any changes. The 95 went from a misdemeanor to a violation on the minor consuming law, as well as having one full year without any changes to the law. 3,900 is quite high, I think. And if you want to relate it back to the administrative license revocation back in 1983, when we first went to administrative revocation for drunk driving, in 1984 we had a total of 7,700 arrests for drunk driving. We now have less than 5,000. But there again, they are monitored by ASAP. They have to complete their screening and evaluation. We have fewer arrests, some 3,000 arrests than we did, or 4,000 arrests than we did back then. So I hopefully we can have the numbers and we can have the things that will let us know whether it's working.
Senator Ward?
Yes. Just in my opinion, I believe in counseling and the programs that are out there, but the reason that the 1983 drunk driving bill was successful as it was is because it made mandatory penalties that there was no wiggle room from, and it wasn't going to an alcohol treatment class that caused the reduction. And just as this is going to have a chilling effect, it's going to be the mandatory losing of the license. They know it's going to happen. It's not going to be going sitting through a nice little class or a hard class or whatever. These kids could care less, just like the drunk driver could care less, but they do care about being locked up. And that will keep the people that are on the borderline from driving. And that in turn, if we could somehow get this message to these kids that are getting their license, that this in fact will happen, we will see that number reduced. It won't be through alcohol treatment programs. It won't be. It'll be through a deterrent of penalties where they think that they're going to have to walk for an additional year. That's what's going to stop them. And that message is not getting clear enough to them, that 4,000 kids are now on foot because they didn't listen. That message needs to get to them. And the only way to get to them is for them to have the message and understand it, or they don't get their license. It isn't treatment. The treatment is secondary, and they could care less about having to go to a treatment program. They care about driving, just like those original 7,000. That's why half of them quit, because they didn't want to spend 3 days in jail without any options of appealing it or anything else. That's why they knocked it off. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ward.
Any other questions or comments? I'd just make one before I ask for a motion to pass the bill out. I sit and look at that graph, and it's truly an amazing number. I just would never have expected 4,000 people. That's over 10 a day that we're dealing with, and we're just dealing with the youth. So I would say thanks and applaud Senator Taylor, and also with the help of the Department of Law, Annie Carpinetti, who's here today, DMV, Kitchen, Lauren, and Juanita, thanks for making this what I think is a good bill. And having said that, I would entertain a motion that we pass Senate Bill 58 to its next committee of referral. Senator Ward?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make that motion, but I'd also like Joe to carry back to Robin my concern about the testing, and if he can fit that in this bill somewhere along the process, I would really think that it would be at least worth consideration. Now withdrawing that comment, I move the Senate Bill 58 committee substitute for Senate Bill 58 Hess out of committee of individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 58 moves to its next committee referral. Thank you, Mr. Ambrose.
Chairman, thank you, Mr. Ambrose.
Let's go now to Senate Bill 11, and Mr. Huber, back with us. We talked about this on, was it Friday? Wednesday?
Yes, sir.
Friday?
Yes, sir.
Friday. And we now have, and each of you should have a committee substitute for Senate Bill 11, and the chair would entertain a motion to place that on the table for discussion.
I move the committee substitute, Mr. Chairman.
Is there objection? Seeing none, committee substitute for Senate Bill 11 is on the table. One person in the hearing room would like to testify. And Brent, would you like to walk through that, or would you like me to do what we've done?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to explain the changes in the CS. For the record, my name is Brett Huber. I'm staff to Senator Halford, prime sponsor, SB 11. After hearing testimony both the first time in committee and then last Friday, the CS was prepared. The changes in the CS are as follows. Section 1, sub 8, it's page 4, line 7. puts a section in the bill that makes a 70% reimbursement of DOE and local voter approved bonds retroactive from the period of 1995 through 97. That's July 1 through July 1. The following sub 9 on line 13 established the prospective rate of school bond debt reimbursement at 75%. There's also been some language added in section 2, line 23 and 24. That prohibits the Department of Education from collecting fees to administer the bond program. And then on the last page of the bill in section 5, lines 17 through 19, there's been some language that was provided by the Department of Education that narrows the scope and the projects resulting in annual operating cost reductions, and it asks that it economically justifies the cost of the project, as DOE pointed out their concerns in the last meeting.
Mr. Huber?
Senator L.
Lena?
That's
a mental block.
Brett,
they look alike.
They're on the same side of the table.
Brett, on page 4, in the middle of the page, starting at line 13, there's new language that I don't recall from the amendment that we considered last week, and I'm trying to, without having the statutes in my hand, trying to figure out what this does, but it has 75% instead of 70. It's the first time I've seen that number. Remind me what that is for.
If I could, Senator Lehman, I talked with Senator Halford. It's a personal preference that I like the number 75 rather than 70, because 75 to me is a fixed number that is different than 70, because 70 could be 80 or 50 or 60. So I talked with Senator Halford about moving that to 75 to get in place in the people's minds of the state that the state pays 3/4, and that's the reason. And he, of course, was called away, and Mr. Huber didn't think that there'd be a problem with that. And if there is on his return, we'll certainly move it back to 70. But to me, it just is a little more concrete that it's just 3/4. It's not a percent that can be played with, and that's why we see the 75.
Well, I'm not sure I understand.
He's
75 is any more concrete
than
70.
He's not much on metric type.
Yeah. Okay. It's what you're telling me is a new number that we hadn't seen before.
We saw it, and you weren't in the room when we talked about it before.
Okay.
It's 3/4 or 75%. 3/4. There. Anything else? Let's see, there's one other thing on this, but I think we covered it. Oh, I know what it was. On page 4, line 23 and 24, about the department not being able to take administrative money. That's a protection, is it not? They're not doing that now, and he explained that to us in sort of roundabout testimony on Friday, but they're not doing that. That's in there as a protection against them starting to do that. So that helped that out a little bit. Anything else on Senate Bill 11? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion to move Senate Bill 11.
Mr. Chairman, I would so move that we move CS for Senate Bill 11 HISS out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Is there one? None. Oh, one. There it is. Yes, zero fiscal note. Thank you. Is there an objection to moving Senate Bill 11? Seeing none, Senate Bill 11 moves to its next committee of referral. Thank you, Mr. Huber. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, excuse me. Mr. Weinberg, I'm sorry. I got to remember to read my notes.
I'll testify at the next committee.
You're more than welcome to come and join us.
That's all right.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry about that. Pardon me.
Waited for 3 weeks.
I know. Okay, let's see. Now let's move to Senate Bill 132. Put this in front of me so I remember it's there. It's Senate Bill 132 is an act relating to the registration of sex offenders. And it's a bill at the request of the governor, and I think Ms. Carpinetti is here from Department of Law to give the sponsor statement. Morning, Annie.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Annie Carpinetti. I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. This bill has actually two related parts dealing with criminal background information. The first part amends AS 1262, which are our criminal justice information systems and security statutes, in two general ways. First, by clarifying procedures where a person can get background information held by the FBI. And second, by eliminating the historical time limitation on prior convictions and the ability to obtain information on prior convictions for state records. So that, in other words, a person who is qualified or able to get background information on another individual can get background information for convictions that are older than 10 years. And this is a rather technical area of the law, and we have Diane Schenker from the Department of Public Safety, who probably knows more than anybody in the state about these statutes. And if you have questions, I would appreciate your asking her. I would try to answer them, but she would do a much better job. The second part of the bill brings us into compliance with the Jacob Wetterling Crimes Against Children and Sexually Violent Offender Registration Act, which provides that by September of this year, the state, in order to maintain, to stay eligible for 100% funding from the Byrne Formula Funding Grants, is required to come into compliance with the Jacob Wetterling Act. That federal statute provides two things. It requires the states to adopt a type of two-tier sex offender registration program, one for certain offenses against children and sexually violent crimes, and requires registration for at least 10 years. The second part of the Wetterling Act provides more stringent registration requirements for sexually violent predators. Alaska law already has a two-step sex offender registration procedure. The first is for 15 years for first-time sex offenders, and the second requires recidivist sex offenders to register for life. When we read the Wetterling Act, we tried to see what would be the best way for our state to comply with the Wetterling Act. The Wetterling Act provides for the state, or actually requires the state, to adopt a procedure whereby we would have to appoint panels of experts, statewide panels of experts in behavior and the treatment of sex offenders, which would examine a person who's been convicted of a sex offense and make a recommendation to the sentencing court whether or not that person ought to be classified as a sexually violent predator. It also provides that this person must remain, if the person is classified, the sentencing court does find that the person is a sexually violent predator, he or she would remain in that classification until the board examined the person again at a later time and made the recommendation that he or she is no longer a sexually violent predator. And that recommendation would have to go back to the original sentencing court for the sentencing court to decide, make that determination, whether the person has ceased to be a sexually violent predator. There are several problems with this approach. First, the cost of establishing a statewide board of experts would be significant. And the second and more significant cost would be the cost of litigating whether or not a particular individual is a sexually violent predator and remains one. And the potential is for litigation for years throughout the life of the person to determine, first of all, the board would have to consider the issue and then would have to make a recommendation to the sentencing court. So it would kind of leave open-ended litigation as to whether this person is still a sexually violent predator. And another objection is whether or not a statewide board of experts or anybody can accurately predict whether an individual is going to continue to be a danger to other people around him. So for these reasons, we've been working with the federal government and we've suggested an alternate approach, which we expect they will accept, which is, in addition to this, to the lifetime registration of recidivist offenders, to add to that category of requiring lifetime registration of persons who are convicted for the first time of the most serious sex offenses, sexual assault in the first degree, which is an unclassified felony, and sexual abuse of a minor in the first degree, which is also an unclassified felony. With that procedure, we think that we have satisfied the federal government, because by registering these dangerous individuals for life, the state will maintain addresses on them and know their location, so that law enforcement in the area where they're residing knows who they are and where they reside. Wetterling also requires the state to verify the addresses of sexually violent predators, and in this case, this would be verification of the addresses of people who are required to register for life every 90 days. So that is, in a nutshell, what the bill does in terms of the Wetterling Act compliance. If there are any questions.
Questions of Ms. Carbonetti? Senator Wood?
I'd like to get a copy of the Wetterling Act. Mr. Chairman, I don't have it in my folder.
I'll be happy to have it right here.
I want a copy of it. Also, if I could, and all the committee members. And also, the other one is the $200,000 that we're complying with, it, are we receiving that now?
Yes.
We are receiving it now?
Yes.
And is there a document saying that our laws are out of compliance and we won't receive it this year? And if so, I'd like to have that document.
Through the chair, we've submitted our draft of this legislation to the Department of Justice, and they are considering, but we don't have any written.
Do we have a document, if I may, Mr. Chairman?
Sure.
Do we have a document that says we will not receive the $200,000 if our law is not changed? That's my question.
Through the chair, we have communications with the Department of Justice setting forth the requirements of what we must do, and we know at this point we don't comply with those, but they haven't formally said your money. To my knowledge, your money will be cut off.
See, well, if it's your knowledge, where is the letter that says that?
Through the chair, I don't know that there is one at this point.
Maybe you could get one for the committee and supply it to us. If you could.
I'll do my best.
Thank you.
Other questions of Ms. Carpenetti?
I just had
Senator
one. I'm not really that familiar with this, but in just kind of reading through this, is there a point at which this is out of maybe time sequence, that some other things may happen at the federal level concerning this, and it looks like there's some other things that may be introduced in this congressional time that would make it easier for us then to come back afterward and comport to what they've done?
Through the chair, there are two other pieces of law that have been passed since the Wetterling Act. One is Megan's, mm-hmm. I know it is Megan's law, which addresses notification of the location of sex offenders. And we think we address this in this bill, which allows the Department of Public Safety to adopt regulations addressing notification. The second is, can't remember the common name for it, but it's a bill that will require farther into the future the FBI to establish a tracking system of sex offenders, and we provide for that in this bill by requiring the Department of Public Safety to notify the FBI whenever a sex offender moves out of state, for one thing, and other states where they're going to the sex offender registration program in another state, if there is one. This statute would require the Department of Public Safety to notify that state and also the FBI.
And before you ask that, Ms. Schenker, if she's in the back there. If you'd like to answer any of these questions, feel free to just put your hand up there. If you'd like to help. She's here for just questions if we have any. So. Yes, Senator Green.
I can't remember my question.
Should we give you some time?
No. I'll also provide for the committee the guidelines that were adopted pursuant to the Wetterling Act, because it seems to me from my telephone conversations with people at the Department of Justice is states are having problems with the statewide board of experts, and other states besides Alaska are trying to find creative ways to avoid them. But some of the provisions of the Wetterling Act are in statute, which can't be changed by the department, but they have adopted guidelines which have given us a lot more freedom in certain areas in adopting a program which we hope will satisfy those requirements.
Senator Green?
And the current sexual offender registration system we have in this state simply does not go far enough in any of these events.
What we have actually ours is better than or more stringent than the federal statutes, in the sense that first offense is must register in our state for 15 years. The Wetterling Act is, they describe it as a floor rather than a ceiling. You must register for at least 10 years, but it's fine if your state has statutes that require registration for longer than 10 years, which we do for first offenders, and then we have the lifetime registration for recidivists, which is more serious than the federal government requires.
I have one more question. In some, and I don't recall where it is in the bill, but my concern would be that we're going to pull people who have only been charged into the same, and there's never been a conviction, or there's never been, it's not gone through the hearing. Did I misread this? It sounds
Chair,
like
I think that's a mistaken reading. You only have to register after conviction.
Okay, maybe you could explain to me on page 2. Maybe I don't understand this. Section 4, under current offender information means information showing that identifiable person.
Through the chair.
Okay.
Senator Green, that addresses the criminal justice information security system, which is different from the Wetterling Act. And Ms. Schenker would.
This is the first part of the bill.
Yes.
And then the, okay, very good. Okay.
Did the what was challenged in court and then came back in our in the state law over the last couple of years? There was a lot of discussion, public discussion about our sex offender law. Did it go to? Was it challenged?
It has been challenged. Yeah, and the main challenge, legal basis for the challenge, is what we call ex post facto, which is Latin words for putting punishment on a person after. Adopting a punishment after the fact, you know, that was not in effect when the person did the bad act. And so far, in fact, I spoke with Jim Hanley this morning in our OSPA office just to get an update. And so far,
what office, please?
Office of Special Prosecutions and Appeals. He's the attorney who is handling the sex offender registration litigation, and nobody has found. Has upheld a challenge based on ex post facto. No court, federal or state, for our statutory scheme at this point.
So ours was challenged for ex post facto, and there was no decision as yet.
No, it has the cases have been dismissed. We haven't. They have been upheld.
There's nothing pending now.
Not on a statewide wide basis. There are a couple of individuals who are challenging. Their particular situation, but not no statewide challenge to our statutes is pending right now.
Other questions of Ms. Carpinetti? Thank you for coming this morning. Mm-hmm. Ms. Schenker, anything you'd like to add? Thanks for being here this morning.
Mr. Chairman, I know that Diane came a long way for this.
You don't want to talk, Warren.
And she does a good job testifying. No. You sure, Diane? Okay.
What should we vote on, whether Diane should come forward or not? You think, John?
By the color of her face, I think she's a vote no.
Make a motion.
Thanks, Diane, for coming this morning. We're going to hold Senate Bill 132. Is there any other discussion that needs to come before the committee in regard to Senate Bill 132? Seeing none, is there anything else that needs to come before Senate has this morning? Let me know about the April 7th interview if you have objection to that. Other than that, we are adjourned. Thank you. April.